the podcast from Belmont Chapel in Exeter, sharing the story, living the life. For more information, go to belmontchapel.org.uk.
Well, now, I'm going to invite Derek Stringer to come up onto the platform here with me, because instead of a sermon this morning, we're going to interview Derek about a few things. Derek, I'll go around here, I think, where I can see the clock, if that's all right with you. And I'm not hinting anything about this man at all. Perish the thought. He is one of the most organized preachers I know. In fact, I remember when I was young, and Peter Maiden of Operation Mobilization was also young, we listened open-mouthed one night to Derek preaching. And we thought, it just comes out of him so naturally. It's amazing. And Peter, who was braver than I, went up to him at the end and said, how is it, whenever I see you, when you start preaching, it's just like turning on a tap. It just starts and goes on and goes on. You never hesitate. You never fluff a line. And if I remember, what you said to him, Derek, was that you memorize the first two or three sentences of a talk that you give. Because once you're three sentences into it, you're going. You're heading straight forward.
They can't stop me then.
Now, there's a challenge. And he does tend to think that way. He's famous, for instance, in Austria at Tauernhof Bible School for the lectures he gave when the Tauernhof Conference Hall was being rebuilt. And so the students had to walk down the main street of the town to the local church to get their lectures in the church. Now, it's not very far, but students being students, they didn't always have their act together. And Derek is, and they were often late for the start of lectures as a result. And Derek is renowned for the fact that he would always start his lectures on time, whether there were students in the building or not. Is that a fairy tale or is that true?
I seem to be well known for that, yes. Yeah. Yeah. They want you to finish on time, so I think if I start on time, we will finish on time.
Absolutely, you know? Right. You've got to... Can we have the screen up again, please, because we have a few more slides here that we want to just show people. Derek, as you've heard already from John, he ministers all over the world. This is a card from, a couple of months ago in South Africa.
I haven't long been back from Cape Town, yes, and I was lecturing in a number of seminaries, Bible institutes, and United Church conventions.
So you get around a bit, and you have been doing that for quite a while, haven't you? Mm-hmm. And this is the newsletter, which I think we've got some copies of here this morning.
I think you have, yes.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So you can read more about him if you've got one of those. If not, we didn't have one for every seat. I can see some on the front row here that nobody's claimed yet. So do get hold of one afterwards. It'd be nice to see them all taken away. Derek trained at Moorlands College, just like Dave Pegg and people like that. You were there a few years before Dave, weren't you?
I certainly was, yes. Yeah.
Moorlands was in Devon, and then it's now in Bournemouth. Where was it when you were there?
It was in Dawlish in my day. I don't come from a Christian background, so I needed to get a bit of a grounding in various things. I became a Christian when I was a student, and I was 18. And then I did a straightforward diploma course. I went on and did some degrees after that in theology, but that got me started.
Mm. And after that, you became an evangelist with the Evangelization Society. Mm-hmm. This is their website here today. You were their staff evangelist for about 7 years, is that right?
That's right, yes. You've done your homework, yes. Mm-hmm. The Evangelization Society, which is now defunct, evangelism has changed in its style, but it was in its day very definitely at the cutting edge of things. And I was with them for 7 years as a young person. And I would, during that time, I don't know how it happened, but I had, I think it was over 400 churches inviting me during that time to be involved with them in teaching and preaching and evangelism, which included here actually as well. I came here for a week and did something. Last time I was here, one or two people came up to me and said they had started their Christian journey that particular week. I don't know whether you're still here, but if so, please come and see me afterwards. It would be nice to meet up again.
Mm, that's great. So you've been around quite a while, Derek, mm-hmm. and you weren't just a travelling evangelist because you settled down and took charge of a church at one stage too, didn't you?
Yes. During that time with the Evangelization Society, one of the reasons why I left was because I suddenly found, and I'm not again sure how, at a human level, I was getting invitations to a lot of different countries. So I now have taught in and preached in more than 30 countries. And as the invitation invitations came. TES is very much for the United Kingdom, and so I was beginning to go elsewhere. So I left there. I became the Bible teacher for a church in Bournemouth for 4 months of the year, and I did 2 month blocks as the Bible teacher there, and the other 8 months I travelled widely. And then there was a church starting up in an area of Rugby, and I became the pastor of that church. Great to see the way through the years that place has really developed. It's a major church in the UK now. And then after 9 years of being there, I went to Salford, part of Manchester, although they are keen to tell you that Salford was there before Manchester. And I was the senior pastor of a church there for just under 14 years. And it had this way of encouraging missions, so once a month I will be away from the church, normally abroad, but apart from the church leaders, nobody would know, because I would fly out on the Monday, fly back on the Saturday, so I was in the pulpit on the Sunday, as it were, you know. But it just gave me that kind of wider view of things, and retained that too. And then after that, I'd always been involved in media. I used to do documentary and news comment programs for the Independent Television Network when I was in my early 20s, and a little bit, not a lot, but a little bit for BBC Radio 4 in the way of religious broadcasting, as they would call it. And so after a while, I was asked, would I continue in a radio kind of ministry? I always feel when you're in your 20s, television is okay, but you look a lot younger on radio as the years go by. So in this last 10 years almost, I've been involved with Good News Broadcasting, which makes radio programs, Christian content radio programs. We make them from 1 minute through to 60 minutes for the believer to the unbeliever and for the person in the middle. So for example, today there will be a lot of community radio stations, which is a growing area of radio around the UK, which will take whatever is appropriate for them. There are things like we have Christian Premier. I'm on Christian Premier 3 times a week, Transworld Radio every day, but mainly the community radio stations is the place where you get really into the root of a community, and that's a growing area. And we touch almost, there are 200 countries in the world, and we touch about 80 to 90% of them every day with our radio programs. And we don't just do English programs. We have Portuguese for the Brazil, for Latin America. We make programs in Ecuador, in Poland. They turn the radio on in Poland, in the prisons, at the beginning of the day, and it just stays on all day. So there are people who respond to Christ, and then we have follow-up systems for that, systems within schools because of the radio work, with drug rehabilitation programs that we would run there. Haven't long been back from Indonesia. The major Muslim country in the world is Indonesia, but because of radio, they are quite happy to listen to radio. They wouldn't go into a church, but they will certainly listen on the radio. We get registered 7,000 responses every month to our radio programs in English. I do the English ones because people are wanting to learn English, so we do a 10-minute daily program with that in mind, with the Christian content, of course, and we do ones in their own language as well. 1 month, last August, we had 17,000 responses in the month of August, mainly from Muslim people to the FM radio stations that we are on around Indonesia. And I could just go on like this. Sri Lanka, the Philippines, lots of different places where we do radio.
In fact, you've got some pictures here, haven't you, that
relate
to some of them. Do you want to talk us through one or two of those?
That's gives just you our logo. That shows you what ministry does to you through the years, doesn't it, and so on. Better move on from that one fairly quickly. Been in more than 30 countries teaching and preaching, and our programs are well in over that. That's just one of the recent congregations, a few of the congregations I've been speaking at.
Wow, that's great. So, Derek, why radio in an age of the internet? We've spoken already about how incredible the new opportunities on the internet are. Why are you persisting with old steam radio?
Yeah, I asked myself that question when I was the senior pastor of the church in Manchester, and I was asked, would I get involved more in radio? At first, we thought of doing it together, and the church there said, well, if we employ somebody else to take on some of your role, would you be able to stay here and also do the radio ministry? So we tried to actually do that, and it really didn't work because the radio started to develop and grow and needed more hands on, and I ended up doing a 9-day week. Now, as you've heard, I'm a pretty organized kind of person, so I could get away with doing a 9-day week, but I realized I couldn't do that permanently, so I needed to make that move. And it was my concern, was what I doing going to fall into the black hole and so on, but I very quickly realized that radio goes to places that we can't go. And it's still achieving a lot. We have a huge ministry in Africa on radio, and there are local churches, and normally led by a group of pastors, who beg and borrow. They don't steal, but they get stuff from rubbish dumps, and they create a radio station. And within a day of creating it, they will average about 800 people actually listening regularly to that radio station. Now, in radio terms, that's not a lot, but it's a good deal bigger than a lot of churches in this country.
Absolutely.
And so you can go on like that in all sorts of different places. Radio is still the main means of communication in Africa. It's beginning to become more specialist because people are obviously podcasting and all sorts of other types of things that they are doing. But they're doing it via the radio so that people are being much more in terms of getting the favorites for what they want to do.
Great.
And we're trying to work towards that end as well. It certainly is a growth area.
We can see why you get excited about it. But you've done lots of different things. I mean, in your journey through ministry up to this point, are there particular Bible passages that have meant a lot to you that you think we can usefully take on board this morning and learn from? Can you think of anything?
It's an easy one to answer, and I did know this one was coming up, so we should be able to flick something on the screen there. There are three passages in the Bible which I actually have at the front of my Bible itself because they've ministered to me in different ways. One is my mandate verse, as I call it, which is John 10:10. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. One of the things that has always concerned me is people who have Christianity, a little bit like, well, I would say getting a headache. You know, when you get a headache, you don't want to lose your head, but it just hurts you to keep it. And they've got Christianity, but it's more something they're enduring rather than enjoying. And that really isn't what it's meant to be. I always think of Christianity in terms of the superlatives. It's not love. It's a love that surpasses knowledge. Mm. It's not joy. It's a joy unspeakable and full of glory. It's not peace. It's a peace that transcends understanding. It's not grace. It's the greatness of his grace. And we're meant to live in the overflow. And this verse really means that. John will know a place because we both go to it, and so does Derek in Sweden to teach there. And I remember one of the local students there taking this verse and saying to me, do you know what this says in my translation of the Bible, which I didn't? And he said, I've come that you may have life and more than you need. And I thought, yeah, that's what I want to be about, so that people don't just get into church things, but Christ becomes real and personal to them. But if that's to happen, then he's got to, in an ongoing sense, be real and personal to me as well. Second verse, which I have at the front of my Bible, is what I call my memorable verse. I have two grown-up daughters these days, of course, but I remember being away on ministry, and through the years, I suppose I spent about 9 months of each year off and on away, and then the 3 months I've been able to preach and teach more local to home. So it wasn't unusual for my young children to not have me around. And I remember on one occasion coming home, and I had got a parcel in my hands, and my eldest daughter, who can remember this, I think she was about five at the time, she remembers it still, she said, "Daddy, what have you got?" And I said, "Well, it's a present for your mummy." So she said, "Well, mummy's upstairs, can I carry it to her?" And I said, "Tracy, I think this is a little bit too heavy for you. Don't you think I ought to carry it?" And she said to me, "Daddy, I'll carry the parcel, you carry me." And this verse kind of stuck at that time. "Cast your cares on the Lord, and he will sustain you." In other words, he carries you as you carry those cares. He sustains you. And that's why it's the memorable verse for me and for her all these years later. And the only other verse which I have in the front of my Bible is what I call my motivational verse, because this just blows me away. And it's 2 Chronicles 6:8. It's where Solomon is dedicating the temple, and he's thinking back to his father David, who wanted to build this temple. And God said to him, "No, you can't do it. You're a battler, not a builder." But as he thought about this, Solomon got to the point of saying this from God: "Because it was in your heart to build a temple for my name, you did well to have this in your heart." So in a sense, David was going to be rewarded by God for something he didn't do, but he would have done if he'd been given the freedom by God to do it. And the reason why that's motivational for me is there are many, many things I look back on that I would have liked to have done in Christian service. I've been busy. I don't want to be barren in what I do. I've certainly been busy in that, and I want to make sure that I do as much as I can in the service of the Lord, not spending time, but investing it in ways that outlast it. But I always know there are going to be those things that I can't do. But to know that God's going to reward me for the intentions of my heart. So when I get to glory, I'm going to see rewards for services rendered. And in all honesty and sincerity, I'm going to say, "But I didn't do that. And I didn't go there." And the Lord will say, "But you would have done if I'd let you, wouldn't you?" And in all honesty, yes, I would have done if the Lord had let me. And that just motivates me to know that the Lord rewards you for the intentions of your heart. If you go to work on a Monday morning and you're sitting there looking at the work, and the boss comes along and says, "What are you doing?" And you say, "Oh, I have it in my heart to work." He will say, "I don't reward you for what you have in your heart, but what you do with your head or with your hands."
Yes,
but God does reward us for what we do from our hearts.
That's very encouraging, isn't it? Because somebody once said, you know, all human lives, when seen from within, look like a series of failures. And we all know that feeling, that there are lots of things we try and they don't succeed. And so, and the idea that God looks at our intentions is very, very reassuring. That's really helpful. Derek, put on your church leader's hat just for a second. We don't have much longer, but this church is going through some big debates at the moment. We're looking, for instance, at the issue of divorce and remarriage and just trying to work out what the scriptures say about it. I better clarify that one, actually, because I think people are kind of worried that we're going to take some sort of hard line and say, if you've been divorced or something like that, we don't want you here. Go and find another church. We're not doing that. This is not a hunt for the guilty or whatever. We all mess up in loads and loads of different ways throughout life. And all we're trying to do is work out what the Bible says we ought to be doing in terms of remarrying or not remarrying people here. People who've got all kinds of track records and none, you know, are incredibly welcome to be part of this fellowship. But it does put us on different sides of the fence. It's possible we'll end up with different opinions. Yeah. Have you anything to say to us as a church leader who's, you know, experienced conflict in churches and seen how Christians can fall out with one another? Have you anything to say that might help us keep the ship afloat, as it were, even if we disagree with one another? What would you say?
I think that, as well as a number of other issues which are come within the context of a church are always difficult issues to kind of work through. When I was the senior pastor of a church in Salford, we ran the gamut of human experience issues like this. People do not come into church these days nicely cleaned up and packaged, as I guess many of you know that from your own experience as well. We all bring different areas of baggage into things. One of the things that used to frustrate me within the church life where I was, it was a pretty large church, and it was a very modern looking, I think you've been there, it's a very modern looking building there as well, with a sports hall and a variety of other things wrapped around the building. And people would tend to come and think, oh, these people have got their act together. Mm. And they just really didn't understand what the average person was like. And it was a matter of lovingly trying to work through a number of issues. And in a way, personalizing something for each individual, not in our situation, trying to draw a line that says this is going to be the law of the Medes and Persians, as it were. This is the rule for how things will be over some of these issues. But just trying to make it personal to the individuals as to what is the most appropriate way of helping that individual. We were very, very close to the area which is known as the capital of homosexuality or the gay area of Europe and so on. So we had quite a ministry in those areas and lots of other things. And it was important to treat people as individuals prayerfully and wisely, just trying to follow things through to actually help people as individuals. Mm. And we didn't end up having conflicts over those issues, because I think our approach was probably very similar to the approach that you're adopting now.
There are lots of different views, obviously, about issues like divorce and remarriage today. And we're getting lots of different views sent to us by church members who are contributing very helpfully on the whole issue. Where would you say that a Christian church needs to get its inspiration from in working out a policy on this one?
Yes.
Is there one source that we can go back to that's more
yes,
than
yes. I mean, obviously, you go to the Bible, don't you? You take that as your base from which you actually work. There are cultural issues from Bible days that you have to kind of bear in mind, the way in which divorce went around. I mean, for example, back in Bible days, you didn't have single people as such, by and large, except those particularly set apart in that way or made to be single because of the situations that they were in. So you always have to go back. But there are principles, I think, that one can glean from that and work prayerfully through and say, now, how does that apply into the situation now? Whenever I am involved in a church, wherever it is in the world, I always look for three things, actually. What an imbalance, rather like couplets. With the light of Scripture imbalance with the liberty of the Spirit. You can have places with lots of liberty with little light, and others with lots of light and little liberty. A church where you can give and receive, you can give of your abilities and your gifting and your talents and of your worship, and you can receive in the way of teaching and instruction and in other ways too. And a church going wide and deep, wide in its mission, but also deep in its sense of growing in faith, love and hope. And I think issues related to divorce and remarriage and other issues like that falls into one of those categories with the light of Scripture in balance with the liberty of the Spirit, because it is very possible, as Jesus said, for a person to have a lot of knowledge of the Bible but not to have the Spirit rightly interpreting it that into their situation. So they have it in their head, but it doesn't make a difference in the way in which they live that out in the life of their church.
That's very helpful. I'm going to invite the band to come back up and get ready for the last song. But Derek, let me ask you one last question as they get ready, which is, if we went on to your radio program right now, your Word Alive radio program, what would it be like? What would we be listening to?
Yeah, Word Alive is a 30-minute Bible teaching program. It's on Premier, Transworld Radio, it's actually on
Hope FM, which is Paul Bournemouth Christchurch right now. Later today it will be in Glasgow and Edinburgh and so on. And it is meant for somebody who wants to know more about the Bible. You'll be listening to the first part of a two-part series on Haggai. If you tune in to Transworld Radio this afternoon, you'll be able to get it on Sky or Freeview, I think, in that way. Haggai is basically, here is a man who is saying, let's get our priorities right. Basically, seek what God wants first, and then other things will fall in place. And that's what you will be hearing. So please do go online.
Let's give him a listen, and let's give him a clap. Thank you, Rex. Thank you.